You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Martial arts and boxing. Mixed martial arts and boxing. Yeah.
Oh, man. We are doing this. Oh, Jesus. What is up, my friends? Welcome. The final big combat sports night of the year. And my God, what a night it was. We thank you, as always, for joining us. This is, of course, the UFC Vegas 45 post-fight show, the Paul Woodley 2 post-fight show. Really, just we're an all-violence post-fight show here tonight. We're not discriminating. This is on MMA Fighting. You know the crew. That man over there is my Arizona brother, Jose Youngs, patrolling the paint up north. We have the Prince of Positivity himself, Alexander K. Lee. And, of course, the finest producer in the business, E. Casey Layden. I am Sean Alshadi. It is very late, especially for poor AK over there. I think it's like 3 a.m. for him. So let us get to it, fellas, because, wow, busy night. Let's break it all down, and I suppose there's really only one way we can start. Oh, gosh. Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley. The rematch, man, and it ends with essentially a worst-case scenario for poor Tyron Woodley. 3 years ago, this man was on top of the world, talked about as one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in all of combat sports, and tonight he... He got the Nate Robinson treatment. Round six, it was a face plant KO. It was a bad one. Jose, I'll start with you, man. I won't lie. I feel pretty sad right now. Like, surprisingly sad. Seeing all these memes flying around the internet, knowing how this one's certainly going to be treated from here forward. The internet is not a kind place. Just your initial thoughts about what we saw tonight.
Weird night. That was a pretty awful fight until that one punch landed. That was significantly worse than the first fight. For as everyone was like, oh, Jake Paul ran away. Tyron Woodley didn't throw any punches in the first fight. I would have preferred that over what was happening until that one punch was that one punch Jake Paul landed. So I don't want to say I was surprised or not surprised. It just, when it happened, I was like, huh, I guess Tyron Woodley's asleep right now. We hadn't really seen that in a long time, or if ever.
Nate Marquardt was the last time.
Yeah, I mean, he's been hit hard and teed up and choked out and lost one-sided decisions. But it's like what we said about Conor McGregor for so long. Like, the mystique about him was, yeah, he lost, but there was never really that image of him just unconscious on the canvas. Like, we've seen him choked out. We've seen him TKO'd. We've seen him, like, break his leg. But we've never really seen him separated from his senses and face down doing his best floor mat impersonation. We saw Tyron Woodley do that tonight. So it's weird night. The younger, faster, stronger,
bigger,
undefeated boxer beat almost 40-year-old fighter who hasn't really won a round in several years. So that sentence, I shouldn't be surprised, but given the fact that it's Jake Paul, maybe I am a slightly surprised that he's the one that's etching his name next to using Nate Marquardt and Jake Paul in the same sentence in 2021 to describe combat sports is a perfect way to end this year.
It's so weird when you frame it like that, but you're not wrong, man. And I think the one thing that stuck with me, this is a very short promotion, the lead up to this rematch, right? It was a lot different than the first time we saw this. And the one thing that really stuck with me on that little tete-a-tete that these two men did with our friend Ariel Helwani this week was Tyron's whole rant about how I can't believe this guy, of all people, has a win over me. That this guy can say that he was able to beat me and that sort of thing. And now it's just, it's so much worse. It's so much worse than that initial rant for Tyron now. I mean, AK, we could circle back to Jake in a few, but obviously we run an MMA site here, right? We have history with Tyron Woodley, and man, it is hard not to think that something irreconcilable happened to one of our own tonight. AK, for you, did this whole series, and in particular just tonight, change Tyron Woodley's legacy forever in your eyes?
So that's a complicated question. So for me, I don't think it should change his legacy that much in the eyes of MMA fans. I think obviously we know in his prime, he was one of the best welterweights. This doesn't change those outcomes. This doesn't erase his knockout of Robbie Lawler. It doesn't erase his two fight series with Wonder Boy, his domination of Darren Till, and whatever other Woodley highlights you want to cherish and hold on to. It doesn't change those things. What sucks is, there's a whole audience of combat sports fans who, you know, are just hearing about Woodley, you know, for the first time because they're Jake Paul fans or they're, you know, casual boxing fans. Or they've only, you know the Woodley, sort of this latter stage Woodley, even the guy that fought was, you know, in the UFC recently and was losing fights in the UFC. And that's the scary part for him, is that amongst the greater like population, he is the former UFC champion who got knocked out by a YouTuber. And it's completely unfair, you know, but I mean, this is the headline. This is the tweet. This is the memes that are going out there. These things are presented without context. So again, for those of us who are hardcore, or just people in the media or just dedicated fans, we know how good he was. We know how good he was. We know what a talented guy he probably still is, what a great athlete he still is. But what most people are going to see is this guy who just lost a second time to social media celebrity, you know, general provocateur, Jake Paul, and the second time just getting clean knocked out. In a void, if we were talking about boxing, we say this is one of the best knockouts of the year. I mean, that's how nasty. If you ignore the rest of the fight, if you ignored, you know, just aesthetically, good Lord, that was scary.
Oh man, it's weird when you're sitting there and listing off all of Tyron's qualifications, right? Because I still, even all of this aside, this whole year, how this has played out for him, he's still a top five welterweight of all time, probably, right? Like, he's on that short list just for his MMA qualifications, what he was able to do at his peak. He's still right there with some of the greats at 170. But Casey, man, I mean, I'll throw the same question to you. Did the way this year played out, and in particular tonight, will this change how Tyron Woodley's remembered in your eyes?
Slightly. I think in the moment where, like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, this is the worst thing ever happened to Tyron Woodley. And it feels that way in the moment. But actually, I think the way Woodley kind of handled it, came to the press conference, even did a little, you know, little interview in the ring, actually.
Incredible at the press conference, I have to say. Like, yeah, he did not need to do that at all.
And it's commendable. It's commendable. We're talking about just like legacies and stuff. Well, first of all, the knockout. I don't know how we calculate this, but do you think in the next week or so, this will be the most watched knockout of the entire year in all combat sports across all the internets?
Without question.
Yeah. Okay. So that just sucks for Tyron Woodley. I mean, it just as a person, it just sucks that you're on that receiving end for, you know, it's just gonna be bad. But legacy wise, it takes a shot, but I don't put this on the same level as, like, say, how BJ Penn kind of destroyed his own legacy. And you know, BJ Penn, you know, one of the greatest lightweights ever. We don't even think of that anymore. Now he's just kind of, this guy gets knocked out of bars by random dudes. Tyron Woodley, he chased a dream. It didn't work out. He still got the paycheck, but the dream didn't kind of became a nightmare, I guess. So I don't think it's as bad as we want to think it is, but it still sucks. And I think the way Jake is kind of handling and not really discrediting Woodley and saying he sucks, he's like, hey, this guy's a warrior. I just fought like a freaking warrior. I'm proud of what I did. Jake never kind of discredited Woodley. If anything, he kind of raised the stock, you know. And that's just him being a really good promoter and really smart prize fighter. And Woodley handled it well. And everyone's gonna make fun of him. We're gonna see the mean memes, but you know, he's got that cash to cry in, you know, so he's good.
Sure. And hopefully it's a lot of cash. Yeah. If we're being honest, right? These last two fights since August, I hope Tyron made enough money to just live well for the rest of his life.
You know what? Mama Woodley seemed okay if the knockout, so I'm okay if the knockout.
Yeah. I mean, Jose,
she's one of combat sports' like great class acts, right?
If Mama Woodley was fine with it, then I think
no surprise.
Jose, you alluded to this when you sort of talking at the beginning of and. It was a really bad fight, right? Like that right hand low key might have just saved this whole circus that is Jake Paul, because that was a bad fight before Jake landed that shot. You even had commentators and the referee just weren't able to mask and hide their disgust. I think that referee said, "Come on, y'all," at least four different times, just like audibly loud for us to hear on that broadcast. Just quick straw poll between all you guys. Should this be the last time we see Tyron Woodley fight in general? Like, is this the last time you want to see Tyron Woodley do anything in this sort of context?
No,
whatever he wants, I'm fine with.
No, but do you want to see him? Not what he wants.
I know what I said. I don't care if Tyron Woodley fights again or not. If he wants to fight, cool. If he doesn't, cool. Like, I'm going to cover his fight regardless.
I take that as a no. I think that's enough. I want to see Tyron Woodley fight. I want to see him fight again. Obviously, I'll love to see him fight an MMA guy in boxing. I like those type of matches and stuff. I want to see him in MMA. I don't really want to see him in MMA. I want to see him pursue his dream. I feel like we've invested so much time. We know Tyron even better now. Yeah, I don't mind. Now, is he going to get this big payday? Is he going to main event a pay per view? No, but you know, we'll see.
Him and Dan Hardy is always out there, right?
Yeah.
That would probably be palatable. But I honestly, I'm done, man. I'm done watching. I was probably done watching Woodley fight before the Luque loss. I was just after the. I think Covington was the one that that really broke me. That I was really like, he really just can't. It's such a cliche to say it over and over again. Can't pull the trigger or whatever it is. But that's just like that's only one aspect of kind of what makes his. Is making his fight so brutal to watch. He'll be 40 in April, I think. And that's a hard 40. That's a hard 40 with a career in wrestling, a career in, of course, MMA. Now two kind of ugly boxing fights and one vicious knockout. I don't know. I'm not saying he can never win a fight again, but I was really surprised how many people were convinced that they would see a different Tyron tonight. I wasn't sold at all. I'm like, there comes a point where you fought so many times. And, you know, so much of fighting is fight or flight and balancing that. And I think his flight has so far overcome his fight instinct. You're just not going to see him put on entertaining or like aggressive fights, I think, ever again. And look, if he hears this becomes a soundbite and this motivates him, fantastic. I doubt it. I doubt he would even care what I thought. And two, I just don't think that that's in him anymore. I think you can tell yourself you're going to fight a certain way. And then once you step in that ring or step in that cage, it's a whole different beast. It just becomes this other thing. And I'm just speaking as an observer, but I really am not interested in seeing Tyron Woodley fight anymore.
Last few things here, because then we'll move on to UFC, because I want to move on from this very depressing topic, if I'm being honest.
Why are we depressed about it? Are we depressed
I'm bummed to see, I wouldn't say Tyron's a legend in MMA, but someone who is so decorated in MMA become a punching bag and a punching in like a joke to, I think, a lot of people out in the wider world who maybe weren't aware of him before this. That's what I'm bummed about, ultimately, I think. Because we've seen this guy do great things, you know, like we saw the good times for him and the rest of the world's just seeing the bad. But Jose, I want to just quickly throw it to you because we saw it all week and we saw it even again tonight. The Nate Diaz part of all of this, Jorge Masvidal too, even if you want to throw him in there. But it is no coincidence that Chris Avila was on this card and it worked, right? Like this whole strategy, it got Nate in the building. You're getting Nate Diaz quotes this week. And on the same night where we saw Dana White say at UFC Vegas 45, the post-fight press conference, that Diaz-Poirier may actually happen. That might be on the table now. We all know Nate's contract status, one fight left on his deal. It feels as if Jake Paul and Nate Diaz, these two guys are circling each other in a way that is very obvious. I just ask you, is this going to happen in 2022? And should it?
It'll 100% happen in 2022. Should it? I mean, they're both going to make a lot of money, so why not? Nate Diaz is going to lose to Dustin Poirier probably in 2022, and then he's free, and then he can do whatever he wants. He's probably going to box both of the Paul brothers, if I'm being honest. And then he can go do a trilogy fight against Conor McGregor outside of the UFC and make all of the money. So good for you, Nate Diaz. Make a whole bunch of money fist fighting a bunch of people that a bunch of people want to see you fist fight. So yeah, 100% and 100% if we're talking about prize fighting.
100%. I mean, last thing on this, then we'll move on. But AK Casey, both of you, odds for Diaz Paul in 2022. Do you see this happening? And who do you favor in that fight if you're being real?
Well, I liked what Casey tweeted, had a tweet earlier saying he was really already kind of thinking about Paul and McGregor. Now, because of McGregor's injury, that probably makes it less likely to happen than Diaz and Paul. Also, like we said, there's a lot of Paul Diaz talk. It's sort of the more immediate matchup. But really, also, I'm
UFC,
already...
I'm just going to come out and UFC will never let that happen. Like, they would never, ever go for that.
Why not?
Well, you just said
because that. Because McGregor's not going to be a free agent anytime ever.
But we just said he's not going to do that. We just said the McGregor-Diaz trilogy outside of the... Outside of... No, but someday. Different. Someday outside of the UFC. Same thing. I think at some point he'll be... You know, if he becomes a free man, that Jake Paul-McGregor fight is going to happen. Now, in 2022, like I said, probably not. Again, a health stuff for McGregor and whatever other crap he wants to do in the UFC before that's done. But somewhere down the road, that's happening. But I'll agree with Jose. I think in 2022... Yeah, do we see that Diaz fight happen with Jake Paul? I would not bet against it. I think the odds are favorable at this point.
Casey?
I actually doubt it. I know we're poo-pooing the idea, but I mean, it was a co-promotion between Showtime, Mayweather, and Zuffa for the Mayweather Connor fight. And I'm talking about Connor under UFC contract fighting Jake Paul. So I still think that's out there. I think there's money. There's so much money to be made, and when's Connor, Jake Paul's going to take?
It's not going to happen. I think for a few reasons, it's not going to happen anytime soon because A, Dana White actually respects Floyd Mayweather as a businessman and a boxer.
There it is.
Definitely doesn't respect Jake Paul. And second of all,
hold on.
Casey and I were talking about this before. We think he does.
Time out. And second of all, Connor is not going to fight Jake Paul under a UFC contract. He's going to fight him when he's out of the UFC and make all of the money. That's going to be the biggest thing. Like, whether we disagree or agree or not on Dana White respecting Jake or not, Connor isn't going to take that fight until he's out. And he doesn't have to share because Connor's oversharing. This is a guy that's not wearing the crypto shirts for 30 seconds on a wedding. You think he's going to share the money of the Jake Paul fight with the UFC? Not happening. He's going to wait to get the lion's share.
I think that would become like the third biggest boxing pay-per-view of all time. Is that crazy to say? I think that's not crazy at all. I think that'd be just behind Mayweather, McGregor, and Mayweather Pacquiao.
I think it's number two behind Pacquiao and Mayweather.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
All right. Enough of this nonsense. We need to move on. Let's move on to the real fights tonight. The real action.
Real fights. Okay. Real fights.
We all know what it was. I'm just saying. There was fun stuff tonight, Gore. And I want to talk about the fun stuff.
Darren Lanza,
good
Frank
Lord,
Gore?
Fellas.
Okay.
Boxing. Boxing is irrelevant unless it's 12 rounds. That's my opinion. Next.
Oh. Oh, take that, I'm just saying. Take that, Serrano. Take that.
Oh, that's a different story, but... Fellas, the Apex was alive tonight. The UFC Vegas 45 was on one tonight because that was a hell of a card. We were talking about it going into it on the preview show. It looked like, you know, one of those decent cards where you're going to get some fun fights. But 10 finishes on a 13-fight card. It tied the third most finishes on a card in modern UFC history. And then in the main event, a different kind of history was made because you had Derek Lewis, the man who seemingly can't get any respect no matter how long he's been doing this, the man who's been the underdog in 8 of his last 10 fights and was somehow the underdog again coming into this fight against a newcomer who had 4 UFC fights. Derek Lewis did it again, guys. He did it again. Swinging and banging. H-Town on that hoe. First round gets it done.
H-Town.
I'm just saying. Dare I say it, the future Hall of Famer is now the UFC's all-time KO king. He moves into first place all-time with 13 knockouts. Jose, go to you first. Initial takeaways from what we saw tonight from the Black Beast doing it again, man.
I mean, Derek Lewis, outside of Francis Ngannou, probably has the most horrifying punch I've ever seen in the history of the UFC. I mean, because his punch is like, they're also just so different. Because with Francis, they're kind of looping and they just look violent, like people's heads snap back and they kind of just fly like you punch them. When Francis punches you, you kind of leave your feet, like a la Andre Arlovsky or Jairzinho. Derek Lewis needs, like, he could fight in a phone booth and he can generate power in like 1 inch and then all of a sudden you're dead. So Derek Lewis fights are like, I don't know what I'm watching half the time because I always feel like a bunch of his knockouts too are when his back is to the camera and he's like punching against the fence, or his opponent is shooting in for a takedown, or something crazy is happening, and then all of a sudden, it's your opponent is asleep, is doing a Tyron Woodley impression in the middle of an octagon. So it's just, it's such a weird thing watching Derek Lewis fight, because like you said, he's an underdog all of the time, and he's almost always losing his fights until he touches you. So that was the definition of Derek Lewis fight. Chris Dawkins didn't look bad at all until he got punched in the face, and then all of a sudden he started to lose sense, started to lose consciousness. So, yeah, good for Chris Dawkins, because that first flurry, Chris Dawkins survived like the first
dude.
Flurry, and I was
how many people have we seen for survive the Derek Lewis flurry? Like, I can't
that's
think
what
of
I'm
many.
Saying. I was like, God damn, this is going to be a fight, and then Derek Lewis just sprinted at him and punched him a whole bunch more times, and then Chris Dawkins was unconscious. So crazy fight, awesome fight. Chris Dawkins didn't look like he – Chris Dawkins looks like he belonged in that top 10 at heavyweight, and he just got punched by Derek Lewis, which happens to the worst of you.
I mean, he looked like he belonged for 3 minutes, and then all of a sudden he didn't, right? AK, I said on the preview show that I was a bit baffled by this whole thing, at Lewis being the underdog in this fight. It seemed like you look back on his resume, and it's a long one. These are just not the types of fights he loses. Like, there are very specific types of fights against the very elite of the elite that he will lose. And then the rest of the fights, he generally will just beat everybody else. What do you make of what we saw tonight?
Yeah, I mean, look, since a couple of odd losses to like Sean Jordan and Matt Mitrione, the only guys he's lost to, Cyril Gane, current interim champion, Junior Dos Santos, former world champion, Daniel Cormier, two division champion, Mark Hunt, again, one of the great, you know, one of the great heavyweights, one of the great striking heavyweights at the very least, kickboxers.
Mahunt one was like the peak of his bad back. Like, he was almost yeah. immobile in that fight.
And that was, by the way, one loss in a stretch of, I think, 8 wins. He went 8-1. So that was the one loss in like 8. So he was still crushing people. So the only question, you know, you kind of ask yourself in situations is, well, is Chris Dawkins going to be in this, you know, in that tier? Will we one day look back and say, oh, that was another loss against, you know, a future UFC champion or UFC title contender, Chris Dawkins, which I still think he could be. But was it going to be building that, getting that shot with a win over Derek Lewis? That's asking a lot. Dawkins had beaten some good veteran names like Olenek, Abdurakhimov, but this is his first like legitimate top five guy I know Derek Lewis has been around for a while, so people, I think every time, you know, he faces one of these young contenders, I shouldn't say young, but relatively fresh contenders, they're going to ask, well, is this, you know, is he on his way out? Is it time that he becomes a stepping stone? And I don't think we're near that stage yet. I think, again, he has a lot of wins left, and I still think guys who are at the cusp of the top 10 or just at the top 10, like in the 8 to 10 range, I still think he's too much for them. And I think that's what we saw with Dawkins. Like, it could have gone the other way. It is heavyweight. It's just there's a reason that these things keep going Derek Lewis's way. You know, people have to acknowledge it's not just luck. It's not just his raw power. There's like a legitimate skill to what he does and how he approaches fights. And that's why he keeps getting these wins. So another big victory for the Black Beast.
Absolutely. I mean, Casey, like coming into this, obviously this was too much too soon for Chris Dawkins. Like that was sort of the big question coming into this. We talked about that on the preview show, and really like the difference, right, between the Tom Aspinall path and what Tom Aspinall is trying to do of taking it slow versus what Chris was trying to do here, where he's a little bit older. He wanted to sort of make that move, make that jump very quickly. It's just so hard in this heavyweight division when there's so few viable names that escalation can happen overnight, like sometimes too fast. And this was one of those. I wonder for you, like, does this validate in your mind almost like what Tom Aspinall has been preaching about just taking the slow road sometimes?
You know, you got to find out. There's only one way to find out, you know, who you are and how good you are. And Chris Dawkins, you know, he signed the contract. He thought he was good enough. He talked a big game. He was super confident. No, like 99% of heavyweights are going to have a problem with me. Turns out that 1% is Derek Lewis. So I'm not anti-Chris Dawkins or anything. Did I pick Lewis? I picked Lewis on the preview show, right?
I'm fairly sure I'm the only one here that picked Derek Lewis.
I'm pretty sure I was the only one that picked Chris Dawkins. I think it was 2-1 Derek Lewis.
Okay,
was it? Okay,
because you said that. I've been pretty high on Lewis for this fight, especially the big jumping competition. And it was one of those, like I said, you know, MMA fans have very short term memories. What have you done for me lately? And Derek Lewis, I think, just had a bad fight. Ciryl Gane fights great. Ciryl Gane is just really good. He makes people look bad. He exceeded my expectations. I thought that was going to be a close fight. It was not a close fight. Ciryl Gane is just really good. Ciryl Gane might be the best heavyweight in the world. We don't know, actually. And I won't be surprised if he does beat Francis, when I thought Francis was the best heavyweight ever just a couple months ago. But here we are. But Derek Lewis, he had a bad fight. He's in the apex. He doesn't have to worry about fans. He doesn't have to worry about, you know, his favorite, you know, screwed up click rapper in the front row watching him. You know, he doesn't have to worry about tickets for families, you know, all that stuff. He's just
crew following him around the whole time. Crew, yeah. Oh, say something funny, Derek. Yeah.
Talk about your balls, you know. Say the line, Bart. Say the line. Yeah. And I feel like Derek Lewis feels that all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. It was just a low-key... He said it. Just listen to his post-fight interviews. Like, stop giving me these main events. Stop giving me these five-rounders. I just want to make my money, beat up some people, and get out of town. And these are the perfect fights for him. Derek Lewis, he doesn't like the glory of being a fighter. He likes the paycheck. He doesn't like the glory. He just wants to get his money and get out. And Apex cards are perfect for him. And I don't know how much this means for Chris Dawkins. It's just a loss. He can easily come back and still be the best heavyweight in a couple years. Charles Oliveira, got subbed by Jim Miller and a bunch of other people before he became the best lightweight ever. So I'm not trying to throw Chris Dawkins, you know, out the window or anything. He's obviously really good. Just a bad night for him, and Derek Lewis is freaking awesome. And there are levels to this game, and Derek Lewis is on a higher level right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's essentially in the same spot he was coming into this, right? We all saw him as the number four guy in this division behind Ciryl, Francis, and Stipe, and whatever order you want to throw them in. And that's still where he is. So, gentlemen, just quickly, let's go around the horn here. I mean, you look at the landscape. You have Ngannou and Gane obviously going at it next month. That's the next big pay-per-view. And then you have Stipe and John Jones just sort of sitting out there in limbo. We don't really know what's next for them. Jose, I'll start with you first. Like, match make this heavyweight division for me right now. Where do you feel like this goes? Because we had Dana White even tonight saying, Derek Lewis, you might want to stay by your phone just in case a call comes and we might need you to fill in January.
Regardless of when who he fights next, Derek Lewis should be on that Houston card in February. That's for sure. If he wants a quick turnaround, but that's up to Derek Lewis. It seems like he didn't really enjoy fighting in Houston last time, but that might have just because he was the main event. He obviously seemed to enjoy it when he fought Ilir Latifi. I think that might have even been the opener of the pay per view, if I remember correctly. So, meritocracy and wins and losses matter. It should be Stipe, but I want Stipe to fight John Jones. So who's even left that Derek Lewis hasn't fought? Because if Chris Daukaus had won, that's a whole lot of matchups that you can make because he hasn't fought. He was 4 or 5 fights into his UFC career. And I feel like Derek Lewis has fought everyone. Who's even left to heavyweight for him to fight? I'm pulling it up right now. Jairzinho, he's the only one. He just lost to Curtis Blaydes.
Otherwise, then you're looking at like the Tom Aspinalls of the world, right?
I know. No,
oh, there you go. Give it to me. I know what you're going to say and give it to me.
The answer is Tai Tuivasa. That's the only fight I want to watch right now. Tai Tuivasa is a fat boy who likes to knock people out and drink liquids out of shoes. And Derek Lewis is a big fat boy who likes to knock people out and throw his cup into the audience. They are both just soundbite machines, and you know you're gonna have a good time at that press conference. They'll have a fun time. They'll have a silly goose time, fist fighting for our entertainment. So I don't give a F. I don't give a fudge, to quote the great Bilal Muhammad. I don't give a fudge about rankings. Inject Tai Tuivasa versus Derek Lewis into my veins. I know all these people on my Twitter when I tweeted that were like, oh no, it should be the Volkov rematch. No, F that. Fat boy Tai Tuivasa versus fat boy Derek Lewis. I'm about it. Sticking inside a small apex, even better. Sign me up.
The Volkov rematch sounds horrible. That's just like, that's one of those special ones where it's like, we saw something really cool happen. Like, we don't need to redo it.
It's because MMA fans on Twitter, MMA Twitter is just a bunch of people that say, I like the color purple. They'll be like, you're stupid. You're wrong. Red's the best. I'm like, whatever, bro. But like, I don't like, they just want to argue for no reason. But the answer is Tai Tuivasa. Anyone that wants to see the Volkov rematch, go suck an egg.
Jeez.
Okay. Guys, that got crazy. Purple's the best color. Tai Tuivasa is purple.
I just have to, I'm not certain, but I was watching this post-fight press conference and someone mentioned that the gentleman who caught the cup, you were talking about shoeys, that he tried to then do a shoey out of the cup. I don't know if this is true. But I really badly kind of want it to be true while also really not wanting it to be true. I don't know if anybody has inside info here, but please let a brother know if this guy tried to do the shoey out of this cup. I that's rough. AK, what do you do next with Derek Lewis?
I don't hate the Volkov rematch. It wouldn't be my first choice, but I do think you can go outside the top 10. Like that's a rankings fight. That's sort of like, well, they're, you know, the first fight was, again, Volkov was winning, and then, you know, give him his chance at redemption. He did get knocked out late in that fight. Fine. So that there's a storyline there. It's a very fight night worthy, either headliner or co-main. So I get it. And rankings wise, they're close. Jairzinho, another good option. But I don't mind going outside the box, as Jose suggested, with Tai Tuivasa, or even, I don't know, I feel like maybe, just because this would be kind of a feel-good fight, though I know... Because Derek Lewis would be probably pretty heavily favored. This is why people wouldn't want it. But Walt Harris? I don't know. I feel like Walt Harris, I feel like that'd be a good fun fight.
Oh my God. Walt Harris on three fight losing streak. And now
why do you hate Walt Harris?
I don't hate Walt Harris.
It sounds like you do.
Listen, I don't think there's an, I know we keep trying to find an easy feel-good fight for Walt Harris. I don't know if there is one in the UFC, if we're being honest. Don't know if there's someone you can just queue up.
There are Harry plenty Huntsucker. Of bad heavyweights. I can go on
don't
the
say anything bad about Harry Hunt. I sense Harry Huntsucker slander coming, and I won't hear it. I won't hear it, Casey. Though maybe that probably would be – that actually probably would be really
that's,
good matchup.
That's who Walt Harris would be fighting, but that's enough about Walt Harris.
Harry Huntsucker. God bless him. But no, I don't hate the Volkov matchup as much as Jose does. But I think that the Thai matchup is very realistic. I think he's going to enter the MMA fighting global rankings, I believe. You know, we won't know yet for a few weeks, but I do think he'll take Augusto Sakai's spot. Sakai was 12th. So either someone else is going to hop in there, or I think Tai Tuivasa might crack it. So, hey, if they're both in the top 15 of the most prestigious rankings in all of MMA, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Fair enough. Well, hey, let's move on to the co-main event.
No.
What's up, Casey?
Derek Lewis versus my personal preference, I want to see Derek Lewis versus John Jones. We ain't going to see that. So I want to see Derek Lewis. I want to see, but I want to see it. I really want to see it. But I want to see Derek Lewis versus Stipe, because Stipe ain't going to get that title shot. And it's a fresh fight. And if Stipe really is one of the greatest heavyweights of all time, which I kind of don't believe he is, even though the statistics, the numbers say he is, Stipe should beat Derek Lewis. And that's why I want to see that fight.
I think that's the best.
A good thing. That's a good thing. Derek Lewis beats up cops. Now he's going to beat up a fireman.
That's the gimmick. Beating up first responders.
Are you a paramedic? You're next.
Yep. Oh my God. I actually think I might like the Stipe fight the best out of all three of these.
Yeah, I love this.
Because
Stipe fight.
That's pretty
because
good.
Stipe is holding out right now, and I just don't think John Jones is going to come back for anything other than a heavyweight title fight. Like, I don't think he's going to fight, you know, a Stipe, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. Co-main event, fellas, because another upset in this one, and a fairly big upset at this one that none of us called. And I think if we're being honest, I think an upset that none of us even really expected. You had Bilal Muhammad going out there and just dominating Stephen Thompson, putting the wood to him, pillar to post. It was never close. Fight was never in doubt. You had 30-25s on the board, 30-26s, just total domination. You had 7 takedowns to 0, nearly 12 minutes of control time in a 15-minute fight. Wow, man. Like, Bilal Muhammad has been waiting for his big breakout moment, and I think we finally just saw it. Jose, what do you make of what is easily the biggest win of this guy's career?
Caught me by surprise. I think I picked, if my words are correct, I thought Stephen Thompson was going to cruise to a 10-9, 10-9, 10-9, 30-27 across the board. I think I referenced, like, Bilal Muhammad wins a lot of decisions, loses to a lot of guys in the top five. Wonderboy's been in the top five for so long. Feel like 3-round fights going into decision in a fight that Stephen Thompson is involved in. Normally, he's the one that's winning. I know he just lost to Gilbert Burns, but Gilbert Burns is really, really good. And I thought Bilal Muhammad was a top 15 welterweight, but not a top 7 welterweight. So Bilal Muhammad proved me wrong. The biggest upset decision-wise, most dominant upset I can think of in a long time in MMA in terms of, like you said, that was just a shutout. I know we've seen
30-25, man, 30-25.
I know we've seen upsets where it was like flash knockouts or submission stuff like that, but for Bilal Muhammad to do that to someone, a lot of people, I remember that thing that was going around on MMA Twitter, was like, oh, tweet a picture of someone you were really confident was going to be a UFC champion. I saw a lot of Stephen Thompson's. A lot of people thought he was going to be Tyron Woodley back at UFC 205 and UFC 209. So good on Bilal Muhammad. Now he's this new guy that every single press conference he's going to be at, he's going to be like, so you're an analyst and a fighter. When are you going to think of hanging it up if you don't get a title shot? Which is just, I feel like every time Anthony Smith does a press conference, it's the first question he gets asked. Now you can add Bilal Muhammad in. But he's not going to get a title shot, but clearly top 7, top 5 welterweight in the world right now.
AK, I mean, I think this one just surprised a lot of people in general. And if we're being honest, this is not two in a row for Wonder Boy. Like, and in particular, the way it went, right? This very takedown heavy game plan. For you, is this win more about Bilal finally taking that long awaited next step? Or is this what's going on? Or is it more about what's going wrong for Wonder Boy right now at this stage of his career for you?
Definitely a bit of both. Definitely a bit of both. I'll praise Bilal first, because again, it takes a lot to be that adaptable. You know, I think we view him as more as almost one of those, again, high volume striker. You know, he wins fights based on cardio and just kind of out toughing people. And I'm sure he's a fine grappler. I just don't think it's something he's ever used to just really dominate a fight before. And on paper, I mean, that certainly seemed like an option, as what you would want to do against Wonder Boy, one of the trickiest strikers, you know, in MMA. We just didn't think he could do it. I mean, Case will tell you on the pre-fight Q&A, I could not have been more wrong. Someone literally asked us, one of the questions was, do you guys think Bilal will just wrestle and smother Wonder Boy? And I was like, that's not going to happen. I'm like, I know we just saw it, but I'm like, I think that's just the Gilbert Burns loss was so fresh in people's minds. They think, oh, his wrestling is a weakness. I'm like, historically, takedown defense is pretty a strength of Stephen Thompson's. So that's why it lends to the second part of your question, where I do think fundamentally, I'm sure his takedown defense is fine, but you're just getting older. Your reflexes are a little bit slower. Your opponents are a little bit younger, a bit hungrier. Wonder Boy will be 39 in February. So again, I'm sorry, I hate to keep dating people like this, but the age in combat sports really, really matters. And once you start going, once you hit that sort of hump, there's a hump, it's really hard to come back. I'm sure people will have examples of fighters who have, you know, looked washed. I don't know, maybe Andre Arlovsky, maybe, you know, look washed and then kind of somehow found a second, third, fourth gear in their careers. But it's rare. Maybe Wonderboy is that guy. But right now, there is based on the last two fights, there's very good reason to believe that he's not. And his days as a contender could be over.
Casey, I mean, same thing to you. Is this more about Bilal winning for you, or is this Wonderboy losing? What's the story here?
I'm going to go Wonderboy losing. I'm not trying to take too much away from Mr. Muhammad with the biggest win of his career, but I'm actually going to put much more of this on Wonderboy. I made a big oversight when I was looking at this fight. I completely forgot this was at the Apex.
It's a big point for even the main event, all of these fights. It played into it.
I completely forgot it was the Apex. I think they even mentioned that in the commentary. As soon as Wonderboy's got that super wide stance already, he takes two steps back. His foot is already in that little, you know, the warning track area. It's not good for him. But the overdone storyline too with Wonderboy, aren't you Wonder Man now? That actually says a lot, because at some point these fighters get old, and tonight I felt I saw an old Wonder Boy, and it showed in the small apex cage, and with Bilal just sticking to a game plan. And Bilal, he sticks to a game plan. I give him a lot of credit for that. And he didn't care about making this exciting. He just knew he had to get a W. This is one of those fights where you don't got to win impressively. You just got to win, and that's all he needed. Take out the fact that it was an upset. It was a boring fight, you know, in terms of just pure in fight entertainment. But the storyline of the fight, you know, Wonderboy, you know, not being a top contender anymore, basically, that's why we're kind of talking about it. That's why I put more of the kind of the story of this fight on Wonderboy just getting old and just that. This is new crop. And AK mentioned, though, this kind of Arlovsky thing. But which I think is interesting, because Arlovsky never kind of came back and became a title contender. Arlovsky was just one of the best heavyweights, and then kind of came this kind of middle of the road heavyweight and just managed to survive.
Well, he had a very brief moment. He had a number one contender fight against Stipe.
Okay, he hit that. But did we ever think that Arlovsky, when he came back to the UFC, was going to be a UFC champion? Was there any that did you ever feel that? No. That's what I mean. I mean, maybe Wonderboy, if he can stick around and if he's okay with this. This is a big thing for fighters and for fans too. And I wish more fighters and fans were okay with this. Wonderboy used to be one of the best. It's okay if he becomes just a top 15 guy, he becomes a gatekeeper. I'm okay with that. As long as he's happy with that and, you know, he's content, you know, with the damage it does to his body, just living that life, you know, like Arlovsky does. Arlovsky makes a great living being a top 20, he's kind of this very end of the line gatekeeper.
If Wonderboy, he's a gatekeeper to the top 15.
Yeah, maybe Wonderboy would be that pretty soon, like gatekeeper to the top 10. And now Bilal, he's a top 10 fighter. So, Wonderboy got old tonight. Small cage wasn't good for him, and I don't see Wonderboy coming back and any sort of title run. That's a shame. It sucks for him. Like Jose said, he's one of those guys we thought, at some point, even after the Woodley losses, that he would get one more crack at it, but just didn't happen for him. He had the opportunity. He lost to Burns, even losing tonight. Like there were roads to get to that title fight. It's just he didn't win those fights, and here we are.
Yeah, it certainly does feel as if tonight's that last nail in the coffin for what could have been with Usman Wonderboy. Just that really interesting stylistic matchup.
It was right there for a while.
And we just. It's timing. This game's all about timing, and unfortunately, we never got to that. I think it would have been a very interesting fight for Usman just stylistically, but it is what it is now. And Jose, very quickly, I mean, this is now seven fights in a row, unbeaten for Bilal Muhammad, and this one puts him in fairly elite company. Like, say what you will about Wonderboy, but he was still up there in those rankings. What do you think now? What do you do with Bilal Muhammad now?
I know he wanted Leon Edwards, and I wouldn't be opposed if they made that fight solely because of how that first fight ended, but Leon Edwards also head kicked Bilal Muhammad really hard before he stabbed him in the eye. So it wasn't that competitive for the 60 seconds it was, but yeah, that's only 60 seconds. So take that for what you will. But I don't know if he wants rematches. I wouldn't say no to a Vicente Luque rematch. That was so long ago, as so many people pointed out. That was UFC 205, the first MSG card. Because I tweeted like, oh, how come no one's calling out Vicente Luque? And they're like, oh, they already fought. And then there's this big argument about how that was so long ago. Fine. Run it back then. If they're both at these new part, like Leon Edwards saying he's a new fighter, he wants a shot at Kamaru Usman, stick Bilal Muhammad and Vicente Luque on the same card as backup fighters, because that's two rematches at welterweight. Both fighters are, all four fighters involved in those two fights are completely different from where they were so many years ago. So if I'm the UFC matchmaker, stick the two nice guys in Bilal Muhammad and Vicente Luque against each other on the same card as when Kamaru Usman and Leon Edwards fight.
I don't mind that fight, but I would say I don't know why Luque would take it, right? Because like, what is that, sort of just leaves him in the same place that he is right now. He sort of needs that one last elevation in terms of opponent. I do really like the Edwards Bilal rematch. That would be really fun, and I think it sort of works right now. But it does feel like Edwards is maybe that next fight for Usman. What do you think, AK? What do you do next with Bilal? What do you do with Wonderboy? How does this play out?
I saw people calling for a Sean Brady fight, which I don't mind at all. I know it's kind of weird because Muhammad has so many more UFC fights than him, but Brady kind of jumped over him with the Chiesa win, depending who you ask. In our rankings, I think Brady is way ahead. Sorry, in our rankings, Brady is 8th. Muhammad is 13th. Of course, this includes Bellator and other organizations. But so he's way ahead of Muhammad in our rankings. He is ahead in the UFC's official rankings as well.
Where are you going to put Muhammad, though? Because this is the rankings before the Thompson fight.
This is true. Well, that's the thing. It kind of goes with what Sean was saying. Shaheen was saying, how much do you bump up Bilal? How much do you drop down Wonderboy? So it's tough. Again, I wouldn't drop down Wonderboy too far. He still has some pretty high quality wins. He beat Luque, the guy that we just mentioned a bunch of times. So, yeah, it's going to be tricky. It's definitely going to mess with the MMA math a little bit, I think. I think we're going to, you know, you can't just rely on, well, this guy beat this guy. It's going to be a bit tricky in that regard. So. But yeah, I either way, I don't mind the Sean Brady matchup. His name has a bit more buzz. It's not really fair. Again, Muhammad is more accomplished than him technically in the UFC. But I think he'd say no to it. I think he probably thinks he can beat Sean Brady. I think he'd like the idea of handing him his first loss. And frankly, I don't know what other matchup he can get right now that's going to push him closer to a title shot. Because I think the UFC likes Bilal Muhammad. They don't love him. I don't think they love him. His fighting style, not super fan friendly. And I think he's got a great quirky personality, but not the kind of personality that's an easy sell for the UFC promo team.
Also, one name that I'm actually a little surprised hasn't been mentioned. Hamzat Chimaev? Bilal now has the ranking where you can sort of, if Hamzat wins that fight, he jumps all the way up to that ranking, right? Casey, where do you go with this one?
I think in terms of fairness, because Muhammad just fought someone that was way ahead of him, and he beat that person. I think now, your next fight, you kind of have to fight someone behind you. And that's why I actually do like a fight like Brady. I even like Chiesa, and I like Chimaev. I think, because the Edwards fight doesn't make sense to me. I think Edwards is getting a title fight. None of the other, Luque, I just don't think Luque should take that fight, honestly. I mean, Luque can take
it. I totally agree with you.
There's just no reason to. I think he can just wait around for a better fight, and that fight literally does nothing for him other than be risky. So I think, yeah, for Muhammad, he's not going to get that title shot next, and I think he should fight someone right close behind him. Brady, even Chiesa, that was a super close fight, and the Chimaev fight is right there too.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries,
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right, so there's still so much left to hit tonight, so I want to get to some fan questions in a second, but just first, quick straw poll. Who among us scored Angela Hill versus Amanda Lemos for Angela Hill? Because I absolutely did.
Angela Hill won that fight.
Oh, I wasn't watching the fight closely enough, I can't say.
I didn't score that one.
Yeah, Casey, Angela Hill won that fight.
Angela won that fight. It was a great... First of all,
30-27 might be one of the worst scored cards of the year.
I do not understand how you can get the second round away to
that card. That was crazy. Yeah,
that card. That's just the rounds one and two were so easy to score. Obviously, it's round three that seems to be kind of the swing round, the tougher round to score. And I understand why some people thought Lemos won the round three. I was pretty, even with the spinning elbow not being technically a knockdown, more of a knockover. Because it kind of hit her shoulder. But even then, I still thought Angela Hill was the better fighter in the round three. And I thought she won a fight. I thought she was going to get her ass kicked, honestly. Lemos was the biggest favorite in the card. I didn't know that. She was the biggest favorite in the card. And, what a cursed fighter Angela Hill is.
Dude, it's crazy at this
four.
Point.
Over four in split decisions. Casey, did I not say this was the upset to watch out for, though? I actually thought, like, again, I wasn't going to watch the fight super closely, but every time I looked over, I'm like, Angela Hill's doing pretty good. Especially since most people, including myself, I would say I talked out of both sides of my mouth here because I did predict a first round win for Lemos. But on our Q&A, I did say if you were a gambling man and you were going to bet on an upset, that's the one to do it. And we saw why. Like, we definitely saw in the fight why that was the case.
Yeah, and when we talked to Angela Hill, I was like, "You're crazy, lady." And she was real confident. She's like, "No, I see holes in this woman's game, and she ain't ready for me." And she was partially right. But it was a bummer. But at least Dana White in the post press conference acknowledged that he thought Hill won the fight. That means
it's just crazy at this point.
It just sucks. It's just incredible bad luck. I don't know what it is about her fighting style that judges don't like, that they almost like, but there's one judge that just nah.
She's the queen of the bad beat. Like, this is now four split decision losses in a row, or not in a row, but just in general for her UFC career. Four.
They can easily go another way.
All of those. Courtney Casey, Claudia Gadelha, Michelle Waterson, and tonight, I thought Angela won all of them. And her UFC record and her run and where she would be in this division is so different if even half of those go the way they should have. It's just crazy. And I will say for the audience, too, just to give them context, AK, Jose, you guys were on the boxing beat tonight. You guys were assigned boxing. So there's a reason you weren't watching the fights. You were not being irresponsible. You were doing your job.
No. Watching like three or four things at once. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're getting late into the night. I know AK at this point has to be almost.
Oh, sorry. I want to say.
Calling asleep, exhausted. So let's get some questions.
No, I'm jazzed up now. I wanted to say about sorry, I will pause again for not watching the fight closely. But MMADecisions.com, 11 media members logged on MMA Decisions. 10 for Hill. 10 had a 29-28 Hill. 10 out of 11. The lone one, our good pal, Jerick Riggs, who scored a 29-28 Lemos. Which, again, I don't think it's like the most insane score, but it does show you. Media was pretty clear who they thought got this one.
Robert. 30-27 is crazy.
Doug Crosby.
All right, Casey, let's get some fan questions in here.
All right. For anyone watching, throw your comments up in the comment section. I'll look for them. But let me pull some ones that we already got.
And vote in the poll. I threw up a poll here for what was the most memorable moment of the night? And Jake Paul, Woodley, Williams, Gore, Lewis Dacus or Muhammad Wonderboy. Paul Woodley, way ahead.
I will say, while we're waiting on these questions, Williams Gore was way more fun than it had any right to be. Like, that was one of the better fights we saw tonight. And I really enjoyed it. And
you guys are crazy because that was horrible boxing. But for some reason,
horrible.
I think MMA fans really like horrible boxing. Because
absolutely.
We love a horrible sloppy box. Because there, how many takedowns are almost worth that fight?
It was like a half of an MMA fight.
Yeah, Gore shot really early, and he got in deep. I mean, that would have been a completed takedown in the UFC.
The Darren Williams like half knockdown where he just basically pushed him like out of the ropes. Like that was
hilarious.
I'm here for that. Like, that was interesting. I just enjoy watching really crazy high level athletes sort of try to do this stuff.
And then of course the clip of Gore becoming momentarily distracted and then eating a punch and then eating a punch and then looking back at Deron Williams like shocked, like, what are you doing? And then eating another punch right in the mouth. That's the new meme. That's going out there. Like, I hope that becomes more famous than the Woodley KO. I know it won't, but that scene is just incredible.
I got that exact meme sent to me by several of my non-combat sports friends. So it's good. Like, that's the one you guys are paying attention.
You guy puncher.
What? Whoa.
Whoa. Hey. Chill.
All right. Let's get a couple questions in here before we get out.
All right. Guys and ladies, here are some questions. All right. Here we go.
Oh, yeah. The highly anticipated.
Four Corner Sports asks, does Justin Taffa deserve the Carlos Felipe rematch? Justin Taffa coming in here, the only UFC heavyweight of all time to miss weight. And then, of course, he wins his fight with a quickness, very brutal knockout of Harry Hunsucker with that head kick in that first round. I don't even have an opinion on this, do you?
Carlos Felipe should be fighting, what's his name? The fat guy that did the flip in MSG.
What's Chris Barnett.
That's the fight to make because they both called each other out. They both want it. So as soon as both of them said, let's do it, I forgot about any other option for those two. So that's the fight to make.
Can we bring back Rocky Martinez just to fight Chris Barnett? Can we make this happen? I was so sad when they cut him. I'm like, no, this fight has to happen someday.
I already pulled this question.
Four Corner Sports is a regular contributor to onto the next one, so he's always bringing out some deep cuts. I'm like, I don't know who's wondering about this question, but apparently one person is. So thank you.
I mean, it's a total bummer for Taffa not to get the 50K. I don't know if he would have got it tonight because that head kick KO was so freaking cool because Mr. Hunsucker he blocked the dang kick
and he blocked the whole thing. Yeah,
the kick was blocked and it was so hard. He still knocked himself out.
That extra pound.
I mean, I know he was hurt before, but these are experienced fighters blocking kicks, and to get knocked out from a properly blocked head kick, that scares me.
We have a theory why he couldn't cut the extra pound.
What's your theory?
Do we have one? I mean,
I thought you were going to lay it on me. I thought you had something cooking. Come on.
So does this tell us he's already cutting down from a lot? Is he like well over 265? Is he like 280, 285? And he's actually cutting weight to make the 265 limit or 266? Is that where the kick? It was literally 1 pound and he weighed in pretty early. So I think they would have given him extra time to cut the weight. And again, look, we don't encourage extreme weight cutting around here. If there's health reasons why he couldn't do it, I understand. It's just very strange. It's very strange for a heavyweight to not be able to cut 1 pound. And again, very likely costing himself a $50,000.
Oh, yeah. And the fine. That a 1 pound over for a heavyweight, that's like a 125er coming in like 0.2 pounds over. It's such a nominal, just nothing type of, but you didn't make the weight.
I'm going to go rogue here on this next question because I see it from David Sandin, and I just need us to address it. How about Killer Cub Swanson and the excellent fight IQ and game plan? Can someone here for me just wax poetic about the veteran Killer Cub coming in there again tonight?
Shaheen, go ahead.
I'm setting the table for you guys. I already said I absolutely love when you see these type of WEC veterans still just hanging around in the game. I said this with Dominic Cruz the other weekend, but this one was so nice, man. Darren Elkins made a career out of surviving these type of things, right? Like he has it tatted on his body. He felt so strongly about it that he tatted it on his body. And tonight, Killer Cub going in there and knocking him out in 2 minutes, spinning wheel kick. It was so good. I love that so much, just to see the vets coming in here like this.
Still got it. That's all I'm going to say. Still got it.
Dude, those slick as hell.
Slick. A few years back, I got to watch Killer Cub do a pad session with Six Gun Gibson in Albuquerque. And I was actually me and John Jones. And we were just watching it. And we're like, that guy's a champ. Like, we're just watching Cub work out and just seeing how talented he is, watching just him roll. Like, he is just a talented, talented fighter. And he just never got that streak he needed to even fight for a title. I put a tweet out the last week, and I said that in my mind, no, Gegard Mousasi and Cub Swanson are the two best ever UFC fighters to never actually fight for a UFC belt.
I mean, I would say Tony Ferguson, but
Tony Ferguson. Well,
any belt.
Gotcha. I'm counting the interim belts. Yeah, I think just. I mean, obviously Mousasi probably would have eventually got it, but he moved on. Killer Cub spent his whole career. He's going to retire as a UFC fighter, and he'll never get a title shot. And I hope the fans just appreciate him. He's just a great dude, a great fighter, and we got to see it tonight. Yeah, that was the fight he lost. That's that so cool. It was the Giga fight.
Yeah. Which is that's a totally excusable loss. Like Cub Swanson.
Yeah, it's just hey man, you got caught. Yeah, but. That's how it is. He's just a great fighter.
Last one. Let's end on this. And I want to loop Jose in because it's his boy. Tristan Gourdet saying, with Gamrot's win tonight against Carlos Diego Ferreira, God dang, did Gamrot look good, too, man.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. Does the lightweight division have the best prospects in the bottom half of the top 15 in the UFC? And he notes Alvarez, Riddell, Saryukian, Gamrot, Fiziev. Jose, I mean, your boy, he showed out tonight.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, everything about that sentence is accurate. I mean, I know a lot of people have been on the 135 bantamweight hype train for a long time, which that is clearly like the most competitive right now at the top. But I've never really jumped off the 155 division just being the most interesting in terms of like the talent level from like 1 to 50. I think there's not a division that can compare because like if you look at like we do 1 through 15, but if you tack on 15 to 30 – any one of those guys could be a top tenner in like 2 years. Like I said this, I thought Gamrot should have gotten the red carpet treatment like Yuri Prochazka, Manel Kopp when they joined. But we get it. But all of us agreed it's because of 155. Like light heavyweight needed new blood, and flyweight, there wasn't a lot of contenders at flyweight. And at lightweight, you fight someone like Brad Riddell. He might like what Drew Dober isn't top 15. Drew Dober could easily be a top 15 lightweight in the world. So yeah, Mateus Gamrot deserves a top 12 opponent next. That dude's a monster. He's an incredible grappler, and then he's stopped. Like I thought he got hurt, like Diego Ferreira got hurt like a freak accident. And then all the replays, Gamrot like slided in this real sneaky knee like against the fence, just a thing of beauty, man. And I can't wait. I said I want to see him and Riddell fight. That depends on if Riddell can get back into the cage after getting that pretty brutally finished by Fiziev, because I think a lot of people want to see Gamrot and Gillespie, because that would just be kind of a fun like grappler versus wrestler type matchup. But I want Fiziev to fight Gillespie, and then Gamrot can fight Riddell. And the moral of the story is lightweight rules.
Oh, God, you just gave me the vapors. Tell me off with Gamrot Riddell. That sounds nice, man.
You know what else rules? KSW, where Gamrot came from. I'm actually glad this came out, because I do want to shout out the one thing that there really wasn't space to talk about. There was KSW 65 today. Mm-hmm. And Gamrot, a former two-division KSW champion, now joined by Roberto Robocop Soldich, who took out the legend Mehmet Kaldag with just an insane left-hand bomb. So if anyone hasn't seen that, we have the highlight on MMAfighting.com. You can find the post. And, of course, check out KSW's social media, wherever you want to see it. You got to see this punch. It was so nasty. It left Kaldag down for, like, I think a full 2 minutes afterwards. It was really scary. And Soldich now is now the KSW middleweight champion in addition to the welterweight champion, and probably sure to join Gamrot and other former KSW stars. Well,
take a pay cut over here. What are you talking about?
I know. I'm saying he doesn't watch. He loves fighting.
I was saying after Guram versus Gamrot on Fight Island, I said to the people in the media tent, like, this fight could be like Holloway Poirier. Like, they fought so young in their careers, and then like 7 years later, they're two of the best fighters of all time. Like Guram is a lightweight whose main training partner is Hamzat. Like, the dude is a monster. Oof. He was like on the beach, he was like lifting him up and like turn, like, you know that thing you see wrestlers do where they just lift the body up and turn him? He was doing that to Hamza. A lightweight was doing that. And then after he won, he's like, well, I'm here and I know Makhachev needs an opponent, so I guess I'll throw my name into the hat. Islam, if you want to fight, I'm here. I'll fight you in 4 days. I'm like, this dude has just beat Mateus Gamrot and wants to fight Islam Makhachev on 5 days' notice. This dude is insane.
Like, sign me up for, and like that. I hope they rematch in like 8 years where they're two top three lightweights.
I should say this about that fight too. I thought, like, I know everyone's going to be like, you know, Michael Chandler, you know, Justin Gaethje, fight of the year. But me, on just a personal level, I freaking love this fight so much. I even tweeted, I said, this is scramble porn. Like, the scrambles that they were doing, I was just like, I was just getting sweaty. I was just like, oh my God, that's those scrambles. Like, whoa, it was beautiful. It's like, and that knee, it is too bad because the way Diego basically got hit really hard, there was no real way for him to collapse or anything. He was already on the ground, so he was like telling the ref, dude, I'm done. So I get why it looked weird, and the refs just couldn't, I mean, the commentators just couldn't tell from the camera angle, but great job by Paul Felder tonight on the commentary, calling out the mm-hmm. racists in the crowd. So,
oh, with just, the Bilal Muhammad fight.
Great. Just Paul, I know we were talking about Cruz and DC last week as far as color commentators and who we dislike most or whatever. Paul Felder, I changed my mind. He is the best color commentator in the UFC. He just did a great job. And he made a good job to recognize and tell the audience, no, that was not a freak injury. That wasn't a random shot. That was a planned knee to that kind of, I guess, floating rib.
It's like
there.
The floating rib. Yeah.
Yeah. That was completely planned. He took him down to whatever, got his back take. And that was just beautiful performance by Gamrot. And poor Diego Ferreira. If you remember, the coach, the commentator said, his coaches couldn't make it tonight.
Yes.
What did they say? They had
other obligations or something.
A previous engagement. So later on, a couple hours later, I'm watching the Paul Woodley pay-per-view, and Darren Williams' corner. I was like, oh, there's Diego's corner. There's Diego Ferreira's corner, man. They're at the freaking boxing match. I was like, yes.
I understand. Darren's a co-owner.
I get it. He's a co-owner. It was just funny.
That's a tough beat.
It was just funny on the commentary. He had previous engagements. I'm like, was he in a wedding or something? Is he a best man? What's going on? It's like, no.
Oh, that poor Carlos Diego Ferreira, because that knee to that floated rib looked like one of the most painful things we saw all night on a night full of painful things. But hey, y'all, this has been it. We've gone long here, yeah, as we was, do. But
75%. 75% Paul Woodley most memorable moments, unsurprisingly. Coming in a close second, Lewis Dawkins at 15%. So,
I think, hey man, give the people what they want. This has been your Saturday night UFC Vegas 45 Paul Woodley 2 post fight show, our final post fight show of the year. And it has been amazing being back here with all you guys. I've enjoyed it so much. Huge thank you to all of you who tuned in, not only tonight, but just who made us a part of your 2021. Whether you're watching live, watching the replay, listening on the podcast network, whatever it is, we appreciate the support so much. And we have so much more good stuff to bring you in the new year in 2022. Also, keep an eye out. We might have a little end of year awards show coming too. Keep an eye out for that. In the meantime, that is it for us tonight. That man over there is Jose Youngs. We got Alexander K. Lee. We got the best producer in the business, EKC Lane. And I am Sean Oshadi. Happy holidays, y'all. What a joy it has been to be back here with you. Keep it locked to MMA Fighting, and we'll see you soon. Appreciate y'all.
I'm going to go watch Spider-Man tomorrow morning.
It's fantastic.
Yes.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.